think of to be. At 5:45, Caitlin showed up with Elsa. I demanded to know where she'd been. "What business is that of yours?" Elsa said. Caitlin fished for her keys, avoiding my eyes. "We need to talk," I said. Elsa grabbed Caitlin's arm. "She isn't speaking to you. Aren't you supposed to be somewhere?" I said. When Elsa didn't move, I thrust a silver-wrapped package toward Caitlin. "I can't, Nick. It's hard for me to admit this, even to a notebook, even to myself, but at that point, I begged, flat-out begged her to open it. It was my only chance. I sank to my knees, not caring how I looked. Nothing mattered. Nothing. And finally, Caitlin gave in. She pulled from Elsa's grip, eyes weary under her heavy makeup. I straightened. She took the package, peeled off the paper, gasping at the leather-crested box. She opened it. The amethyst caught the sun's dying rays from its diamond perch. Caitlin's eyes widened. "I was going to wait till Christmas," I said. "But there won't be Christmas without you. There's nothing good for me without you." Elsa made the tiny violin gesture with thumb and forefinger, but Caitlin turned the box in her hand. "Put it on," I said. Elsa's voice. "She won't take you back just because I love you, Caitlin." I ignored Elsa. "Caitlin, you can't be bought with some trinket." Elsa was angry. She pointed to Caitlin. "You think I haven't noticed that big red mark on your face? He did that to you."
"No, I didn't."
"Did he?" Elsa demanded. "Caitlin?" Caitlin was silent. We stood there a long time. Caitlin looked from me to Elsa, then back. Finally, she said, "Of course not."
"Oh, God, you're such a liar. You should be happy together, a liar and a criminal."
Elsa stormed into the street, not checking for traffic. Caitlin started to follow. I stopped her, saying,
"Try it on, Kat."
"I don't know."
"You're going to let her boss you around?"
I slipped the box from Caitlin's hand and removed the ring. I took her hand. When she didn't pull away, I eased the ring over her knuckle. "Give me a chance, Kat."
"I don't know."
"So, you don't love me anymore?" Caitlin didn't answer. Mrs. McCourt's car pulled into the garage. I heard footsteps in the house. Then she was in our faces. She winked at me, barely looking at Caitlin.
"Your hair's a mess. Can't believe he stays around with you looking like that."
She smiled at me again. I still held Caitlin's hand and saw Mrs. McCourt's eyes go from my face to our hands. They lit on the ring.
"Where'd you get that?"
Caitlin raised her head. "Nick gave it to me."
"Give it back. A young lady does not accept jewelry from a gentleman."
She turned her shadowed eyes on me.
"Where does a boy your age get that kind of money?"
Caitlin muttered something about dealing cocaine, and her mother said, "Sarcasm isn't attractive."
"Who's being sarcastic?" Caitlin said.
Mrs. McCourt shook her head. "Caitlin can't keep the ring, Nick." "I'm keeping it," Caitlin said, which was news to me. She crossed her arms, stuffing the ringed hand between elbow and breast.
"I think you'd be happy someone buys me a present, but no, you're jealous."
"Don't be ridiculous." Caitlin didn't respond. Mrs. McCourt yanked her into the house and slammed the door. I walked to the driveway, unsure whether I was high as a concert audience or lower than a flea at an NBA convention. When I got to the car, I heard my name. I searched the pink shutters for an open window. I walked toward it. I could barely see through the screen, but she held up her hand, and the ring gleamed.
"I'll keep it," she said.
"To piss off your mother?" I asked.
"She sent me to my room. Can you believe it?"
Caitlin rattled the screen until it detached. She stuck her hand under and reached for mine.
"It's not the ring. It's you. All day I've thought about what you said about changing, how you loved me. I didn't tell anyone we broke up except Elsa. Big mistake."
"Was it?" She nodded. The black screen didn't dull her blue eyes when she said, "I love you, Nick. I want to be with you. I just want you not to hit me." I promised I wouldn't, and she said, "I believe you." March 30, 9 p.m., Mustard Watermelon Bar, South Miami. "Hello?" The payphone smells of booze and hairspray. I grip it, taking a swig of beer. Across the room, Leo, in someone's University of Miami baseball jersey, tries his moves on a redhead. Caitlin's voice fills my ear.
"Why are you doing this, Nick?" She's different. At least, she sounds different to me. Wheel of Fortune blares in the background, and Caitlin sounds used up. Is it Saint's threats? Mario's nagging? No, it's me. The only thing that's changed is me. Please leave me alone, Caitlin's new voice says, and I want to obey if it would make her sound happier. Leo gestures from the bar. I wave him off, closing my eyes, trying for the feeling I used to get with Caitlin, how it felt to know she loved me, could love me. No good. Please, Nick. Leo calls my name when Kat says it. I push the receiver button, leave the half-full beer on the ledge, and find Leo. He's added a blonde to his circle. Overripe, but borderline beautiful, and obviously meant for me. She smiles. Leo palms my shoulder. Nick, meet Laura. He sees her notice my black eye. Nick got hit with a baseball. Cut the crap, but I nod and straddle the bar stool. Laura leans against me, smelling like the telephone did, and I feel the roundness of her breast on my arm. I don't react. Can I get you something? The bartender asks. You have Mountain Dew? I ask, suddenly remembering Mario's rule about no alcohol. Why am I even here? The bartender shakes his head. This isn't McDonald's. Order a beer, Laura says, but I wave the guy off and look at Leo. He's making out with the redhead. I wonder where Nasa is tonight. Laura watches me, putting her hand on my butt. I don't react. Finally, she says, What are you, gay? That's it. I leave her standing there and return to the telephone. I fumble for Mario's card. He said call him anytime. I stare at his name a minute before shoving the card back into my wallet. I call a cab. I fall, painfully sober, into bed. When I wake, the digital clock flashes 12 o'clock. My watch says 8:30. I'm late for school. I remember I'd been dreaming of Caitlin, and I roll over longing to dream of her one last time. Later, when I wake up for the second time. The first thing I do is pick up the journal. Funny, I didn't want to write in it. Now I'm way over the word count I needed. I could probably stop, but I have to see this through to the end. If I don't, I have the feeling I'll drown. The journal. So, I was being careful again, freaking about whether I'd make a wrong move. Sometimes I heard Elsa's voice, He did that to you, and saw Caitlin running from me. But Caitlin wore my ring, and everyone knew she was my girl. At school, Tom was big news. Back in October, he'd bet Liana that if an opposing team scored 10 points on our defense, he'd get a short haircut. Liana had been lobbying for that anyway. What if you win? I'd asked once. If no one scores 10 points, you get anything good? He smiled. Not like you mean, little buddy. Liana said she'd cook me dinner. I'd called him a sucker. But by late November, no one had scored 10 against us, and Tom got the credit. Key was having its first winning season, and if we won the last game, scheduled to coincide with Key's annual Winterfest carnival, we'd make the regionals. What she doesn't know is, if I lose, I'm shaving my head, Tom said as he walked to the chorus room to meet Caitlin one day after returning from Key West. Two guys, hands still greasy from auto shop, accosted Tom, wanting to rub his head for luck. One guy even called Tom Samson. I said I guess that made Liana Delilah. Tom didn't answer because at that second, Caitlin rushed from the chorus room, Derek Wayne hot on her heels. Derek was saying, You know you want to do it, and Caitlin giggled, practically crashing into us. Do what? I asked, giving Derek my best glare. Oh, nothing. Caitlin tried to pull me toward the parking lot. Derek walked away. I didn't budge. I want to know what Wayne the Brain wants you to do. It's silly, just... Mrs. Reyes said I should try out for the Winterfest talent show. That's great, Kat, Tom said. If she asked you, she must think you're really good. Like when Coach told me to bulk up so I could be starting linebacker. He couldn't say that if the position wasn't available. I was getting a little sick of Tom in football. Caitlin was beaming, and I said, Wouldn't that take a lot of time, though? You've got your sorority meetings. We were approaching the parking lot, and suddenly it was like a conga line heading for Tom. Except the music was more Insane Clown Posse than Gloria Estefan. Several generic-looking cheerleader types approached Tom about being a target in Friday's pie-throwing raffle. Liana materialized from the crowd, along with a reporter from Keynotes.
Dave, Doobie Dooley, who smoked pot behind the bushes mornings before school, threw himself at Tom's shoulder, shrieking, "Don't let her scalp you, man!" Some freshman JV players followed, giving Tom we're-not-worthy gestures. I steered Caitlin around the carnage. Once we broke from Tom, we walked alone. We reached the car, and I opened Caitlin's door. "I don't want you in that talent show." I didn't like it. She'd have extra practices, then be parading herself on stage for everyone to see. But Tom said, "The Gridiron Hero's a music critic now." He had a point. So go out with Tom. When Caitlin started to protest, I said, "Look, I'm trying to protect you. I've heard you sing. You suck. I don't want you embarrassing both of us." She started babbling about what Mrs. Reyes had said, and I said, "Are you deaf or just stupid? I said no. Subject closed." Why did she have to do stuff to set me off? I saw my fist clench in my lap. Caitlin saw it too. She stared at my hand, then at my face. Finally, she said, "I guess you're right. I'm really not good enough." "That's my girl." I put my arm around her, kissing her. "Will your mom be late tonight?" "Probably around 7. "So I'll come over after practice." "Sure," she said, and I kissed her again. Tom and Liana finally broke from the crowd, and we drove to Mr. Pizza together. Caitlin didn't mention the talent show again, and neither did Tom. Still, it nagged at me. All I'd had to do was make a fist, and she'd given in. Or had she? April 1. Passing period after Miss Higgins' English class. "Where did you get the black eye?" Higgins asks after class Wednesday, pointing 2 red-tipped index fingers at my face. Behind me, second period drifts to their desks. Present from an old friend. Same friend as last time? Last time? I feel suddenly warm despite the air-conditioned cool. "January, I believe," she says. I don't flinch. "No. Then I was training for boxing. Had to give it up, though. Interfered with my poetry." Higgins pulls her gradebook from the top drawer and flips through its pages. She doesn't smile. "You missed 2 days in October. Came back with bruises." "Flu." "A day in January? Fat lip?" "Cold sore." "Now this." "This wasn't..." "Mrs. Walters noticed the same pattern last year." "It's not what you think," I say. "What do I think?" Higgins draws breath between slightly parted teeth. I can't avoid her eyes. She knows about my father, from my poem, maybe, and my face. But what does that mean? Teachers are supposed to report child abuse, but I'm not a child. I'm 16, old enough to take care of myself. I shift my suddenly immense weight from foot to foot. "Breathe." I give her a Nick Andreas smile, meeting her eyes with my good one. "That I have lots of enemies?" "Or one enemy," she says. "Someone at home, perhaps?" I gesture at my eye. "My dad didn't do this." "I don't believe you." I shrug and walk away, almost breaking into a run at the door. I don't think I breathe until I get to chemistry class, but my mind is racing. If Higgins says anything to my father, he'll just get meaner. The journal. The sound of ice cubes greeted me. In my father's house, ice cubes are air raid sirens that send me diving for cover. I searched for an exit. There was none. Usually I missed happy hour, my father's version of dinner at home, but he was early. I was late, and worlds collided. My father swirled his glass. I tried to look casual, impossible, and walked past him. "Hi, Dad." He gestured me closer. The clink of ice against crystal intensified, and I began the countdown in my head. 10, 9, 8. I walked toward him. 3, 2. He brandished a wrapped condom between 2 fingers like a witness with a bloody glove. "This is yours?" Nailed, as in crucified in the true biblical sense of the word. I hung back, trying to avoid the inevitable blow. I stared at the evidence. "Answer me." I stepped toward the stairway. He didn't react, and I glanced back at him, expecting the worst, bracing myself. Finally, I said, "Yes, sir." My father smiled. He sat in his antique wing chair against the backdrop of Biscayne Bay, clutching his crystal glass and grinning like I'd never seen. "Congratulations."
I figured I must have heard him wrong. I said, "What?" "Congratulations, my son, for becoming a man." I felt marble beneath my feet. My fingers relaxed. My father was proud of me. For years I'd brought home perfect report cards, trying to make him happy, but now he was proud? Is this the only thing that makes me a man in your eyes? I wanted to scream it, but that clinking ice brought reality back. My father was finally proud of me. I smiled. "Thank you, sir." He gestured toward the leather sofa beside him. He poured another scotch, filling his glass almost to overflowing, drank half and filled it again. He filled a second glass halfway and thrust it toward me. He raised his drink. "To my son, becoming a man." I drank with him. I'd had scotch before, but this tasted different, bitter. Impossible. My father bought the best. He asked me if I had a girlfriend. I took another sip, still bitter, and nodded. "Her name's Caitlin." This he ignored, reaching for his wallet. He pulled out a wad of bills, hundreds, who knows how many, and leaned forward, fanning them in front of him. "Buy her something nice. Then give her 100, and tell her to get some pills, because these things..." With the money, he gestured toward the condom thrown on the glass table. "These things do not work." He shoved the bills at me and refilled his glass. I heard the waves, the pale liquid sloshing against crystal, and his question. "Do you know how I know this, Nikos?" I nodded. I'd heard it before, too many times to care. I met his eyes, not taking the money. His smile was gone. He dropped the bills onto the table. I threw back the rest of my scotch. 16 years old, he said. "I came to this country with nothing. I worked, joined the Navy, went to school. I made an error." He stopped and refilled my glass before emptying his own. "For one mistake, I was to pay. To marry a nothing whose family barely kept her in shoes. I paid once. I will not pay again." He slammed the empty bottle to the glass table. "You must not make my mistake, Nikos." I nodded. I was the mistake. But I was numb to it. I felt the scotch's heat inside my body, in my toes, my fingertips. I didn't drink any more. I also didn't point out the obvious, that he was rich anyway. My father was silent, his green eyes expecting no answer, and finally I stood, took the money, and said, "I'll do that, Dad," and shoved the wad into my pocket. I counted to three before I added, "Okay if I go study at Tom's now?" He nodded, and I walked back to the door. His voice stopped me. "Nikos?" I turned, hand on the knob. He was smiling again, eyes half closed, slumped in his chair. "You're a tough little bastard, Nikos. Tough like me. You wanted to be born." I nodded. The glass slipped from his hand and shattered against the marble floor. I was out of there. I sprinted down the driveway, not knowing where I was going, and jumped into my car. I roared into the night, wanting to scatter my father's money, like his words, to the December wind. April 2. Miss Higgins' classroom. Thursday morning, there's an envelope on my desk addressed to my father. My vital organs dance a jig as I turn it over. Not sealed. Casting a glance around the room, I slipped the sharp paper from its ice-blue envelope. The stationery is the blue from the desk of type, the handwriting elderly. I read, "Dear Mr. Andreas, it has been my experience that children reflect the lessons learned at home. Therefore, you are to be congratulated on your fine son. Nicholas is an exemplary student in my class and a valued member of the Key Biscayne High community. He is intelligent, innovative, and reliable. I am certain the affection and understanding he receives from you play a part in that. Please give your son the respect he deserves. Sincerely, Letitia Higgins." I stand there, chuckling at first at her characterization of my father's affection and understanding. On second reading, the phrases attack me, too saccharine and pointed to misinterpret. I realize Higgins and I have an agreement. She knows. She wants my father to know she knows, but she won't get me in trouble. Why does she even care? After class, I read it again, leaning against the white-tiled men's room wall. How much of what she said about me is true? At noon, I go to her. She crams her paperback under her cafeteria box lunch when I enter, but not before I notice the title. Love's Savage Fury. She grimaces. You're expecting maybe the Iliad, she says. I smile, hesitating in the center of the room with nowhere to put my hands. Finally, I approach her desk and lean against it.